When I was a child, I was almost 7 feet tall. I knew that people were measured in feet, so I lied down on the ground, and I took a piece of green chalk, and I marked a line below my feet and one above my head. And then I stood up, and once again, knowing that people were measured in feet, began to walk out how many feet I was tall. I was almost 7 feet tall. Something changed. Now I'm only 5'7". I don't know if something went wrong, if I shrank. I know when you get older, you're supposed to start shrinking, but I don't think I'm that old yet. But maybe it was that, or I was being measured by the wrong standard. This evening, we're going to talk about the measure of greatness. Nebuchadnezzar considered himself to be a great man, but he measured his greatness by the wrong standard. The definition of greatness is that which exceeds the norm. No one aspires for mediocrity, but we can become mediocre Christians when we measure greatness by its normal and worldly standard. The goal of this lesson is to become truly great Christians. As we learn from Nebuchadnezzar in the book of Daniel, open up your Bibles to the book of Daniel if you've not done so already. As we learn from Nebuchadnezzar in the book of Daniel, we will learn three reasons to modify our standard of greatness and learn five ways of measuring true greatness in our lives as we serve and we glorify God. What you find in Daniel chapter 3? Daniel chapter 3 is an amazing passage. And it's a passage that we can learn a whole lot about being great from. What happens in Daniel chapter 3? But that Nebuchadnezzar constructs an image and he commands all people to worship it when the sound of the music plays. The first thing that I want to note, and the first reason why we should modify our standard of greatness is that man doesn't measure up. You see Nebuchadnezzar as he has built this large image, that he is measuring his own greatness. First off, before we get too far, I want to note to you the theme of Daniel chapter 3. It's going to become very apparent as we read a little bit of the text. I'm just going to be reading snippets. Starting in verse 1 and continuing through 18. It says, Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold, the height of which was 60 cubits and its width 6 cubits. He made it up in the plain of Dura, the province of Babylon. At the end of verse 2, the provinces came together for the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. These satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the rulers of the province were assembled for the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. As he made the proclamation at the end of verse 5, it says, "You are to fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up." At the end of verse 7, it says that nations and men of every language fell down and worshiped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. As it continues on, and we find that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refuse to bow down and worship this image, they're brought before the king Nebuchadnezzar. And as they're brought before him, he brings this accusation against them. They said, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up?" At which point they boldly stand before him and say, "We don't have to answer you in this. We are not going to answer, or we are not going to bow down to the image that you have set up." Verse 15 says, it says, "Now if you are ready, at the moment you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the lyre, the trigon, the psaltery, and the bagpipes, all kinds of music, to fall down and worship the image I have made, very well. But if you do not worship, you will immediately be cast into the furnace of a blazing fire. And what God is able you to is there who can deliver you out of my hands? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego boldly proclaim that they are not going to worship that image. But what was wrong with that image is that the theme of Daniel chapter 3 is the statue which the king set up. And actually, as before we go any further, if you notice, if you picked up an outline, that there are a whole lot of blank spaces, it's because I want you to interact with what we're doing. And so you'll have fill in the blanks that will all be on the PowerPoint. The first part is, or the first one that you are to fill in, is that it is that the king set this up. The king set this up, and it just notes that time after time after time. 10 times in a matter of 18 verses, the text alludes to the fact that Nebuchadnezzar set up the image. There were several problems with this image, but that which the text brings most attention to is that Nebuchadnezzar's took refusal to worship it as a personal offense. He was upset, and it was because it was a measure of his own greatness. It was in some way a testament to Nebuchadnezzar's glory because he did it. But no matter how large the image, the statue was, it was never going to make Nebuchadnezzar great. One thing about the size that I think is very interesting is how big was this statue? You find it in Daniel chapter 3, verse 1. How big was it? It was 60 cubits high by 6 cubits wide. That which I find most interesting is the auditorium class out here is starting to study the book of Revelation. And one thing that's important to the book is the concept of gematria. It's the study of numbers. And in this, the most famous number from Revelation is the number 666. It was the number of the beast. How big was this statue again? 60 cubits by 6 cubits. In fact, I think that there might be a connection there. I won't stand firmly on that. But the one thing that these two numbers have in common is that they show just how much man will seek to exalt himself. 6 in the book of Revelation is that number which falls just below 7. 7, the number of perfection, the number of God. And 6 is the number of man trying to be God. Man building himself in his own image of greatness. Building himself up. Showing all the world that he is truly great. That's exactly what Nebuchadnezzar is doing here. And that is why all men of every nation and every tongue are to bow down and worship this image. But no matter how big this image was, it was never going to make Nebuchadnezzar great. Do you want to know who really was great in this passage? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The three friends were great because they glorified God. That is going to be the key phrase in this study this evening. They were great because they gave honor to God, because they submitted to Him. And as they glorified Him, they truly became great. That's why we remember Him today, isn't it? Why do we remember Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Except that they stood up. That they refused to bow. And they refused to accept the definition of greatness that this world had to offer. Nebuchadnezzar was possibly the most powerful man in the entire world as they are standing before him. Truly the measure of what the world would deem a great man. But they saw something greater. They said, our God is able to deliver us. And even if he doesn't, we are not going to bow down and worship your image. We're not going to accept that. We're not going to give in. And it is that that made them great. And it is that that made Nebuchadnezzar less than great. In the rest of the book of Daniel, as we're going to see, turn over to chapter 4, is that Nebuchadnezzar continued to just see himself, to define greatness by what he was accomplishing, by what he owned. The second reason why we should modify our definition of greatness is that the Most High is the ruler. I meant that to be as punny as possible. God Himself is the ruler. He is the one by whom greatness is compared. He is the definition, and He is the one who has all authority and all power. And that is the lesson that Nebuchadnezzar is having to learn here, is that God is the ruler. This is actually an exact quote from Daniel chapter 4. Three times it notes this, and we'll come to the reason in just one moment. What happens in Daniel chapter 4? At the beginning, Nebuchadnezzar has a dream. Nebuchadnezzar has a dream in which he sees this tree. And he's very disconcerted by it. And so he calls in Daniel. And he says, "What does this mean?" Daniel reluctantly says, "This is what it means." But what was the vision about? About a tree. Let's read about this tree. In Daniel chapter 4, beginning in verse 10 and going to go through 17. "Now these were the visions in my mind as I lay on my bed. I was looking, and behold, there was a tree in the midst of the earth, and its height was great. The tree grew large and became strong. Its height reached to the sky. It was visible to the end of the whole earth. Its foliage was beautiful, and its fruit abundant, and in it was food for all. The beasts of the field found shade under it, and the birds of the sky dwelt in its branches, and the living creatures fed themselves from it. And I was looking in the vision in my mind as I lay on my bed, and behold, an angelic watcher, a holy one, descended from heaven. He shouted out and spoke as follows: 'Chop down the tree and cut off its branches. Strip off its foliage and scatter its fruit. Let the beasts flee from under it and the birds from its branches. Yet leave the stump with its roots in the ground, but with a band of iron and bronze around it. Now in the new grass of the field, and let him be drenched with the dew of heaven, and let him share with the beasts in the grass of the earth. Let his mind be changed from that of a man, and let the beast's mind be given to him. And let 7 periods of time pass over him.'" Hey, there's that number 7 again. "This sentence is by decree of the angelic watchers, and the decisions is a command of the holy ones, in order that the living may know that the Most High is ruler over the realm of all of mankind, and bestows it on whom he wishes, and sets over it the lowliest of men." What's going on in this? Nebuchadnezzar was the tree. And not even in that bad kung fu movie kind of way, "You are the tree." No, he was the tree that was about to fall. He was the tree that was about to be cut down. He was the tree that before had splendor and greatness. All of the world saw it, and everyone benefited from this tree. But the higher it got, the harder it fell. Nebuchadnezzar was this tree. And Daniel interprets this dream as a warning, saying, recognize, humble yourself, know who really is in charge, know who really is great. But a short time later, we find Nebuchadnezzar again. Read with me in verse 28 through 30. And this happened to Nebuchadnezzar the king 12 months later. He was walking on the roof of the royal palace of Babylon. The king reflected and said, "Is this not Babylon the great, which I myself have built as a royal residence by the might of my power and for the glory of my majesty?" O Nebuchadnezzar, you have no idea what's about to happen. For while the words were still in his mouth, a messenger came to him and said, "It's time. You were warned." And what happened to him? He was cast away from man. He ate grass like a cow. He was drenched with rain and dew. His claws became like birds' claws. Not a pretty picture. But what's the message? That Nebuchadnezzar was humbled as this tree. As Nebuchadnezzar once again admired the works of his hands, it was a measure of his own glory. That's where he went wrong. He simply saw everything and said, "This is how great I am." How can we do that today? Men love to look at people who are successful. We have celebrities, which we call stars. It's how elevated we think of them. We pay attention to the people who have accomplished something, who have a lot of wealth, who have a lot of intelligence. And we long to be like that. And so, it's funny that even poor people, people who have nothing at all, can take the things that they have and think, "This is why I am great." It's so funny, because even Nebuchadnezzar, who was possibly the most powerful man in the world, who was probably the richest man in the world, still was nothing compared to God. And so, Nebuchadnezzar was humbled until he recognized that the Most High is the ruler. That's where that phrase comes over and over again in Daniel chapter 4. It was going to be the end, the marking point to which Nebuchadnezzar, his time of punishment would end, when he recognized that God was the ruler. But it does happen. It does happen. And so we come to the end, and the third reason why we should change our measure of greatness, or our standard to the measure of greatness, is that greatness is an added measure. That's what we learn from Nebuchadnezzar at the end of chapter 4. Read with me verses 34 through 35. "But at the end of that period, I, Nebuchadnezzar, raised my eyes toward heaven, and my reason returned to me, and I blessed the Most High and praised and honored Him who lives forever. For His kingdom is everlasting kingdom, and His kingdom endures from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are accounted as nothing, but He does according to His will in the host of heaven. And among the inhabitants of the earth, no one can ward off his hand or say to him, 'What have you done?'" The first thing that Nebuchadnezzar does when his reason returns to him was to glorify God, to bless, honor, and praise the Most High. And in that, Nebuchadnezzar was finally great because he recognized, read with me then in verse 36 through 37. At that time, my reason returned to me, and my majesty and the splendor were restored to me for the glory of my kingdom. And my counselors and my nobles again began seeking me out. So I was reestablished in my sovereignty, and surpassing greatness was added to me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise, exalt, and honor the King of heaven, for all his works are true and his ways just, and he is able to humble those who walk in pride. It says that greatness was added to him. He recognized that the glory that he had, the greatness that he received, was a gift, was given to him by God. And therefore, he began to glorify God with it. That's what I want to bring us to this evening. And at this point, we are going to see five ways to measure greatness. And if you look on your outline, yes, I was cheesy enough that they are all going to spell out great. Sometimes I think I have too much fun with this. Five ways to measure greatness. The first, measure how your good health by how it glorifies God. We are blessed with a lot of things, and our good health is just the start of it. We all have enough health that we are here tonight. And what a blessing that is. And even if not, we are healthy enough to be alive. That in and of itself becomes an opportunity. That in and of itself is something with which we can glorify God. And if you are using that to God's glory, then truly it is a measure of greatness. Second, measure your riches by how they glorify God. I'm going to start to see a pattern here. This is a very wealthy congregation in a very wealthy area. And monetary riches don't really mean a whole lot. But there's something that men really try to aspire as being great. They define greatness by how rich they are. We in this country can simply just count how rich this country really is. Even in an economically hard time, this is still one of the richest countries in the world, with the richest people living the best standard of life. But as we have been given that blessing also, we ought to use it to glorify God. It's where Nebuchadnezzar went wrong. He took his 60 cubits by 6 cubits worth of gold, more than his weight in gold, and then some, and he used it for himself. He used it to glorify himself. Therefore, Nebuchadnezzar was not great. But if we can use it to glorify God, truly it is a measure of greatness. Third, measure your education by how it glorifies God. Again, you're starting to see that pattern. What is this all about? What does it mean to be a truly great Christian? Except that we can glorify God in everything that we have, including our education. And I will admit, I use that as an E word to mark intelligence. Why do you remember who Einstein is? Because he was smart. He was great because he was intelligent. Sometimes people can get so caught up in how smart they are and how much education they have and become so wrapped up and involved in that that they simply use it to bolster their own ego. But why do we have blessings from God except to glorify Him with it? How can you glorify God with your intelligence, your education? I'll leave that question for you to answer. But think about that. Using your intelligence for something worthwhile, that you can know the Word of God, and that you can tell another person too. And if we can use our education to glorify God, truly it is a measure of greatness. Fourth, measure your accomplishments. Guess what? By how they glorify God. Nebuchadnezzar, as he stood over the city, and as he looked at everything, he saw the accomplishments of his hands. He saw that which he was able to do. And he said, "How great am I?" With all the blessings that we have in this life, we are able to accomplish a great many things. On a day-to-day basis, just look at your activities. Do any of you keep to-do lists? This is what I need to do. This is what I need to do. How about making some of those God-focused? And using the time that you have... Oh, I cheated. Using the opportunity you have to accomplish great things, to accomplish great things for God and glorify Him. Let your light so shine before men that they see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. That's what Matthew 5:16 says. And if you can use your accomplishments to glorify God, truly, it is a measure of greatness. Last, got a little ahead of myself. Time. Measure your time. Can anyone fill the rest of this in? Except by how it glorifies God. Moments pass, minutes pass, hours, days, months, years. And as they all pass, we're here. We may measure time as a vapor. We know that it's short, but it just means that we have a short time with which to glorify God. I encourage you to take that list. Take an additional 10 minutes sometime tonight after you've gone home, maybe even just before you go to bed. Figure out how you can glorify God in this life. No one strives for mediocrity. No one. No one wants to be just average, someone that no one remembers, someone that hasn't done anything great. But I tell you, you will fall to be mediocre and nothing at all if you are not glorifying God with your life. I was thinking the other day of a poem. I think it was written by Lord Alfred Tennyson. And it was about a man who desired to make his name known, who desired to be remembered after he passed away. And so he built a statue for himself, kind of like Nebuchadnezzar. He built this statue, and you find it as a passerby looks down and sees the face buried in the sand. 2 feet were all that remained. It was because he tried to make himself remembered. And as time passed, it sat in the sands of time, and no one knew who he was. That's okay. It's what happens to all even great men. However, if you want to leave your mark, glorify God with your family. Leave that legacy with them. Glorify God among your coworkers, among your friends. And you will find, just like Nebuchadnezzar found, that once you humble yourself and exalt God, greatness is an added measure. He will say, "Come in. Enter into my rest, my good and faithful servant." And he will give you the glory that is equal to his. You will share in his glory. And isn't that what we are all aspiring for? Again, I encourage you to take that list and think of how you can glorify God in the things that you have. But also, for those who have yet to accept that Jesus put aside that glory, the glory of the only begotten, or the glory of the Father, and he came to this earth and died, he was truly great because he served God and delivered us from our sins. And what a great and wonderful thing that is. I hope you appreciate how great that is. And how you do that is by glorifying God. By not living for this world anymore. By living for Him to the praises of His glory, says Ephesians 1.